Hi, today is January 22nd, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 191. I'm Todd Agosto Ward, my good friend John Westfall. Good afternoon where you are, I guess. It's still morning here.
Yeah, good afternoon. And to our listeners, good evening, good twilight, good, you know, whenever you're listening to this in your podcast player of choice.
Right. And to our buddy Arnie, who we've not had on the podcast, Guten Tag. Or Guten Morgen.
Sure what time it is. We could just start listing all the people we know and all the languages they speak and just start greeting them all by name.
Okay.
Or we could just, you know, I heard an analogy today. Well, not today. It was this week, in full disclosure, that said that podcasts were basically the equivalent of sitting around with a group of friends and just never saying anything, or having them, you know, kind of ignore everything you say because you're listening to them. And and I thought that is true. The podcasts I listen to, it does kind of feel like I know the podcasters on a closer level than just, you know, other forms of media that I take in. And that's also, I think, why some of the YouTube channels I follow have gotten so popular. It's because people feel like a one-to-one connection with the host or hosts of the show, and they don't realize that, you know, millions of other people could be watching or listening to.
Or in our case, tens of people.
Oh, yeah, tens. On a good day, dozens.
Yeah.
You know.
And I have to agree with that opinion. I don't know about the YouTube video stuff, because I really don't follow people on YouTube video, except some of the instructional stuff. But I will say, for audio podcasts, I definitely agree with that opinion. And I think for me, at least, it's because I only listen to podcasts in two ways. One, in the car, with basically the podcasters' voices surrounding me, literally, with, you know, multiple speakers in the car. And I'm the only person there, and they're the only person talking. Or persons talking, or two, wandering around with my earbuds in, and so, you know, they're like literally in my ear. So I agree with that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that might be an interesting difference in that television, movies, more visual media, you tend to watch in a larger space with a speaker that's farther away from you, so you understand that there's a disconnect there. But with podcasts, you tend to listen in cars, you tend to listen in earbuds, so you are right next to the sound.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, and speaking of YouTube videos, first thing on my list is a short one, is that Google has published a series of Chromebook tutorial videos on their Google and YouTube channel, or Google Chrome channel, I should say. And it's the first set of new videos they've published in many months, maybe a year, I think. So if you're interested in Chromebooks, as I am, I'm still waiting for something I can actually order and have delivered to Hawaii. Give it a shot. There's one called Video Tutorial Switching to Chromebook, which is one I took a quick look at. And it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. You know, not too much new stuff, but that's because I've been trying to read up on Chromebooks before I buy one.
What if you bought a Chromebook and you don't know how to get on YouTube? How's that? Where do you get help with that? Because I could see, and you said these are the first videos in a long time, so maybe the Chromebook bought Chromebooks and couldn't remember how to make videos, and so it took them a while to figure that out. There's just very many meta references we can make to this.
Well, you know, it's an interesting, well, speaking of meta reference, so, you know, I kind of complained on my Amazon, in an Amazon review last night about the Oddkey Wi-Fi USB dongle I bought for my MacBook with the broken Wi-Fi hardware. And basically it works, but it's really slow. We discussed this in a previous podcast. And, you know, the problem was that, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, the software for it, and you have to install software for it, it just is not automatically supported by Mac OS. It's on a mini CD, which doesn't go into the, you know, slide-in DVD player, a DVD drive on my MacBook Pro, which still has an optical disc. So I had to put an external drive to load the software, and, you know, I couldn't download it because, well,
hell, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi was broken. So hello.
Well, you're just lucky that they didn't. I mean, the mini CD is the equivalent of giving you all the code in binary and asking you to just type it in for your driver. You know, you've talked about writing drivers in the past, so just do that again.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, alternatively, and I know this is a security problem and I don't have a solution to it, but you could put a little bit of RAM on your USB dongle and give the mm-hmm. user the option to access it or not, saying that this is where your firmware driver installation is. And if you, you know, accept the responsibility to open a foreign USB storage device, there's your driver right there, you know?
Yeah.
How hard could that
be? You know, I'm sure this exists. I just don't use it because I haven't bought a new presentation clicker in years. But I've always thought that was a missed opportunity by most companies who made the clickers for presentations, because they give you a full-size USB antenna that you plug in so that your remote clicker can connect to it.
Right.
Throw a little bit of RAM on there, and then for the people who are presenting on the road, they can have their PowerPoint presentation right on that. Plug it in.
Radio.
Yeah, there it goes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm sure someone has thought about that and done it, but if not, please let me know if that does not exist, and I will go out and patent it immediately before this podcast gets more than like 40 listeners.
I think you should do it, because I've never seen it. And I've there was a time when I was looking at clickers, I kind of gave up on it, and I just use my keyboard now. But, you know, for folks like you, where that is not a desirable option, you know, people who stand in front of a crowd on a podium type thing, that's, it'd be a real win.
The clicker thing, the other thing with clickers that I've never quite figured out is that the one I use, which is made by Keyspan, has full mouse control.
Yep,
I can walk around, and I don't understand why that's not more common, because there are many times I've been halfway across the room and I've needed to dismiss a dialogue box or something else, and that's been very handy. So I really don't quite get clicker manufacturers that just give you, you know, four buttons and there you go.
Right. Yeah, I think I have a very old Keyspan brand clicker also, and it too. And this is, by old, I mean like maybe 10 years old. And even back then, it had that mouse function, which I found very useful back when it was still working. It's broken now. It's old, you know. I don't claim that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't blame it for dying.
I've had all three versions of their clicker that have had the mouse support. The funniest one was the first one that I bought way back about 14 years ago. That was my first experience with lightning fast Amazon shipping. I have no idea how it got to me to this day, and this was way before Prime, but I ordered it on a Tuesday night and it showed up Thursday morning.
Wow.
And you know, in a time before Amazon Prime, with just basic free shipping, I think they were doing free shipping over $25, I was really amazed by that one.
Yeah, you know, I think it's still true today, but when you buy electronics in particular, it seems to ship faster than other kinds of goods, and I don't know why. It's not like it's perishable, you know, but...
There's an electronics truck just outside all of our geek houses, you know, and it just waits for us to order something and delivers it immediately.
Just-in-time delivery.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, next up is something is a service that I know you and I both use, and that's Evernote 8.0 for iOS was released as a brand new UI. And, you know, I want to say to Evernote, I like your service. I'm not going to complain about the new pricing because it's okay with me. But your constant is not correct. Your frequent dramatic UI changes, they're getting annoying.
So here's my message to Evernote. I like your UI on iOS now. I think it's a nicer UI. I love your UI on Mac OS. But your UI on Windows looks like it came from 1998. And I think 1998 wants their UI back, because it is the clunkiest, weirdest UI ever. The things that I just do on my Mac when I search my Evernote library just seem like so easy. And on the Windows, it's kind of, I'm on the Windows. Gee, I sound like I'm 100 years old. On Windows, it's just not that easy for me to find what I'm looking for, to search certain tags, to find my shortcuts. And the same thing goes for the folks that make 1Password. 1Password also is great on every platform except Windows, where it looks like it's from 1998. So.
Well, and you know, I have to say this about the Windows version of Evernote. I actually prefer the UI from several generations ago. It was a very clean, pane, tiled, whatever you want to call it, design that was easy to understand, easy to use, easy to find stuff, easy to switch between notebooks. The new one, I mean, it's not, I'm not saying it's super difficult. It's not gouging your eyes out difficult. But it is more difficult than it needs to be, I think, in an attempt to be, I don't know, trendy, something, whatever it is they're doing. And of course, you know, you and I had so many problems with synchronization and conflicts when we were trying to use Evernote for our show notes that we gave up on that idea. So I don't know if they ever got that fixed.
Yeah, I don't think we were the straw that broke the camel's back on that. I think they, but yeah, we've been on Google Docs now for at least 70 or so podcasts.
Yeah, so
and well over a year. before that, we were on Evernote.
Yeah, and I have to say, Google Docs as a collaborative text sharing tool has been working out great for at least for me. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm perfectly happy with it.
Yeah, I was actually at a workshop on Friday where they did everything in one giant Google spreadsheet. So all the individuals that were working on their projects, it was all on a different sheet of the spreadsheet. And I thought that was interesting to do that sort of large collaboration where no one was really working on each other's material. Mm-hmm. We were all working on our own sheets, but it gave the facilitators the ability to kind of quickly jump through and see how different groups were doing by just switching to different spreadsheets or different spreadsheet panes.
Yeah, that would have been impossible 10 years ago, I guess.
Yep.
Where there might have been Google Sheets, but I don't think you could do that yet. Okay, so, you know, I looked at the new Evernote 8.0 for iOS. In my opinion, anything that needs notes to show you how to use a new UI is a step backwards. You should be able to look at it and figure it out, especially on a phone or a tablet, in my opinion. On a PC or Mac, okay, you know, it could be a little bit more complicated because of the screen space, whatever, but overly complicated if you need that many prompts.
And on a Chromebook, there'll be a video on YouTube any day, assuming you know how to get to YouTube on Chromebook.
Next item up is, I know you're not running the Windows 10 Insider builds, but I'm still running it on a Dell Venue 8 Pro, which is a very low-end, inexpensive tablet. And it just got the 15014, I guess, preview build this weekend. I installed it overnight. And it has a couple of interesting new things. You know, normally when you see these preview build updates, you don't see much new for a long time, except for the initial, the first one. But this one had a couple of new things. It has, let's see, I'm just kind of looking at my list. It has a new Action Center tile called Blue Light, which is familiar to people who use iOS devices. And that basically is a display modification that reduces or removes, I guess, the blue light from the display, which is said to interfere with your ability to sleep if you're reading a light-emitting device late at night before you go to sleep. So I haven't tried it yet, but looks interesting. There's also a new Windows setting icon called Holographic, and I don't have any of the HoloLens stuff, so I can't really test that, but there it is in the new Windows setting icon. And there's a kind of a new feature, I guess, in Edge, where you can buy and read ebooks. And I don't get why you would want to do that. I mean, not that I don't get why you would want to read ebooks. I don't get why you would want to buy it from Microsoft. I won't speak for you. I've had so many problems with Microsoft provided content, including the ebooks that I bought from, I think, Barnes & Noble for my Windows. No, what was it called? Windows CE Pocket PC, for my Pocket PC that I can no longer read. At least I don't think I can read. And music that I bought early on from a Microsoft vetted third party store that I can no longer listen to. And of course, Microsoft's own Zune marketplace, which I think I don't even know what. I guess the music that I actually bought is still okay. They're not DRM'd or anything, and I can still play them. So that's not bad, but the stuff, the playlists and stuff, they're all gone. I would not buy any content from Microsoft, to be honest, of any kind.
Yeah, I kind of think Microsoft has burnt a few bridges there that I'd like to, if they can hold on to, something and not rename it, not rebrand it, not relaunch it, not modify it completely, because, you know, you could trace like Groove back to Zune, back to, you know, Microsoft has had a media store for many years. It's just never been the same for more than a couple years. Right. So Microsoft, keep something around for 10 years like iTunes, and then maybe I'll believe that you know what you're doing, and we will consider purchasing content.
And quite frankly, there are so many good stable alternatives now. Working by content from Amazon, of course, you know, kind of the original content provider in terms of physical media and now digital media. I have no problems buying stuff from them. In fact, if you buy a CD, or if you bought a CD from them 15 years ago, there's a very good chance they've automatically converted it to an MP3 and put it in your Amazon library for you, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's true.
And, of course, like you said, many of us have been buying from iTunes for years, really probably the first trusted digital media place that many of us had any confidence in, that it wouldn't go away. And I've also been buying from Google Play. Not so much music, but I've been buying TV series through them. And I have a family plan, so my daughter, who's away at college, can watch the shows I buy because they're in a shared family library, so... you know, it's we have very easy to use trusted sources, and Microsoft is not. I don't know how easy it will be, but it's not a trusted source to me. At least not very for content. Okie dokie, and I don't know if this is trust, but kind of sad. My 2008 Dell PC that I specifically bought when I became a full time blogger. Briefly, I think it was less than a year I was a full time blogger. That was kind of a fun but sad ending. Died is too strong a word. It doesn't operate like I think it should. Basically, it doesn't turn on the way I think it should. And
I think computers should turn on most of the time.
Know the problem is it's always had a problem with its RAM where it wasn't seated properly. It would heat up for some reason, expand or something, and I'd have to reseat it once a month. And I tried to get warranty repair from Dell, and they wouldn't do anything, you know, which is why I'm never going to buy another Dell desktop again. But basically, I think the RAM, in this case, it's not the expansion. I think the RAM simply needs to replace, and I'm just thinking, you know, it's almost a 9-year-old desktop, right? 2008. And while RAM is inexpensive, I'm thinking fix or replace. I'm voting to replace it. I think I'm going to go get a new, like an i5 or something. This is just a quad core, whatever it is. I don't even know was it a Pentium back then? I don't remember. But at any rate, your thoughts on this kind of thing? Or I also considered buying an inexpensive laptop, but I already have a Windows laptop. And oddly enough, it's a Dell, I should admit. It's a Dell laptop, and that's only because that was the best configured device I could find at Costco, where I buy all my laptops.
Yeah, I think right now, if I were to buy a desktop, I have no idea what I would get. I've been on laptops for so long. The thing I want is a refreshed Mac Mini. But
yeah, me too.
Seen any sign of that yet? So
nope. No, I think
your Dell just might have to go off into the sunset.
Yeah. So I think I found what I want. I think it's either $399 or $499. I gotta go look again. But relatively inexpensive. Acer, and it's oddly enough, and I think I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago, I was hoping to buy the Acer Chromebook R13, but I can't get one shipped to Hawaii from Amazon. I could go to Best Buy, but I don't like going to Best Buy, so I haven't wandered down there to buy one. And anyway, I think I'm going to buy an Acer desktop, assuming it ships to Hawaii. It's, like I said, under $500, 2 terabytes of hard drive, 8 gigs of RAM, Core i5. You know, it's not a game machine, but really what I need it for is to store, you know, to back up stuff, to store photos and things, which you then get backed up to a little remote network drive as well as a USB drive. And that's all I really need it for, and I think it'll be fine for that. So I'll probably order that pretty soon.
Okay.
All righty. Well, you've got a couple of things on the list.
Yeah, I've got a few random notes. First of all, for those geeks out there that like customizing their Android phones and were kind of mourning the loss of Cyanogen Mod, which for a long time was the most widely known homebrew and then pseudo legit brew. You know, actually, there were devices that shipped with Cyanogen Mod. Lineage OS, which is the successor, is available this weekend, so you can go download that and install it. It does not come with root access built in. However, you can download another zip file and flash that in, and it will enable root, which is interesting. I read that, and I thought, you know, so often in Android, when you think about putting your own custom firmware on your device or your own custom ROM image, you always just kind of assume, or at least I always did, that you'd have root access, that mm-hmm. was going to be enabled. So it's interesting to see that it's an extra step. It's not just a quick little default in Lineage.
Have you ever loaded CyanogenMod on anything? I have not.
I have not recently. Back when I was on Android full-time, I was pretty much only on CyanogenMod. I would really? Make sure devices that I was getting out. The last one I used, I guess the last full-time Android device I used was the Nexus Galaxy in 2011, 2012, the third Nexus phone. I don't think I flashed anything crazy on that. I think I kept it stock Android. But before that was the T-Mobile G2, which I really liked that device, and that one was running CyanogenMod.
Yeah, I only use one Android device at a time. Well, generally speaking, I only use one phone brand at a time. So that's not true. My Apple 6 Plus is now dead, so I couldn't use that if I wanted to root it or something. And I have a Nexus 6, which is not new, but you know, several generations old now. But it is my main phone, and I don't want to put anything aside from stock in there. I have a Nexus 4. I guess I could consider sacrificing. Ah, interesting. So CyanogenMod is gone as a company, I guess. And this is the new thing.
Yep, it is. Okay. The next thing I had was an interesting report that came out in DSL reports this week, that AT&T is losing more subscribers than any other carrier in the United States. And this made me think a little bit about how I think of the three or the four carriers in the United States. Mm-hmm. I kind of naturally still default to thinking of them in Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile order, although T-Mobile did overtake Sprint in terms of number of subscribers in Q1 2015, so that's old news. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to wonder, we talked a little bit last week about will certain companies still be around, will iPhone still be around in 10 mm-hmm. years, etc. And it's just interesting, this order, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, or you know, some close approximation of that with T-Mobile in the end, Verizon at the top, has been around for quite a while now, and I'm wondering if eventually that will change.
Yeah, if anything, I would expect Sprint to disappear sometime in the foreseeable future. Not saying tomorrow or this year or next year, but I can't see how they're going to remain independent for long. They just don't have much of anything to offer except, I guess they do have an unlimited plan, but I don't know how attractive that is to the majority of people.
Sprint as a company tends to have a lot of things up their sleeve that amaze me. I remember I think it was 2011, in February, I bought Sprint stock at mm-hmm. something like $2.22 a share. It was mm-hmm. ridiculously cheap.
Almost and then, stock, yeah.
Yeah, then less than 2 years later, it was up to $9.
Okay.
And I ended up selling off most of mine when it was at the low end four, high end like $7 range. Okay. And now it's back up to $9 again. So it's, or at least it was at least a month ago when I checked. So it's very strange how Sprint tends to have this way of looking like they are on death's door, and then they come back from it. And you go, okay, well, maybe Sprint's going to be okay. And then a few months later, you're looking at it and going, I don't know. Yeah, Sprint right now is trading at $8.93 a share. But if you look over the five-year graph, you find this dip in 2014. It hit a high of $10.79. Mm-hmm. Then it dips back down to like $4.13 or so, and then it was rocky for a little bit. Then in late 2016 or in February 2016, it was back down to $2.66 a share, and now it's back up to $8.93. Yeah. So it's like every few Februaries you should buy Sprint and then sell it off every few Januaries after that. Well, it's a really bizarre trend.
If I recall correctly, Sprint is now owned by SoftBank, right? Which is a Japanese company.
Yes.
So I think that popped the stock, you know, at the time of purchase, and it's good that it hasn't really fallen that dramatically since then, I assume. So well, it is a different company than it used to be.
It did get all the way back down to 266, though.
Oh, really?
Last year in February, okay. And then it's back up to 893 now. So,
yeah, there. You know, I have to say, you know, full disclosure, I do still have one phone on Sprint. It's for my mom, and it's the only reason it's still on Sprint is my mom doesn't want to change the phone. You know, physically doesn't want to change the phone she's using, which she likes a lot. So unless it breaks, I can't switch carriers on her quite yet. Because it's CDMA and my other carriers are GSM, you know, I can't physically move that phone over to another service that I use, which would be either Google Fi, which would mean having to have her go to a smartphone, which I don't think she'll like, or to AT&T, and then I'll have to find a phone she likes, which is kind of hard for, you know, older folks. And I'm not exactly a spring chicken, but obviously my mom is older than me. That stands to reason. And, you know, a little bit harder to change for her to change phones. But, yeah, that is interesting. I wonder why. I mean, you know, aside from, well, AT&T has some issues, I guess. Speed being one of them in certain areas. But I was thinking of Verizon, too. Because I have a Verizon MiFi that is very sufficient in the areas I use it. Okay, I think you have one more thing, and I'm trying to figure out what this one is about. So I'll let you explain it to
So,
me.
Yeah. So I saw this doing my digging before the podcast today, that starting in the next few weeks, internet users in the United Kingdom will be getting notifications from their ISPs if they go to visit the Pirate Bay, which is a big, you know, big torrent, BitTorrent website.
Yep.
And it is ostensibly to educate users on the facts about piracy and how piracy works, and that the website they're going to, more than likely any content they get there is not going to be legally licensed content for them to consume. And I thought this was interesting because, A, it is the ISPs doing it officially. It's not, you know, some other group that has sort of started placing ads or anything. It's because the ISP's noticing that you are going to that website. And I wonder, is it really education so much as it's, we're watching you, we know you're going here, don't do anything that, you know, would make the rest of us ashamed of you and want to disown you. So I just thought that was an interesting interesting piece of Big Brother-esque sort of things. Maybe it'll go on the next edition of Conspiracy Views podcast.
There you go. Although there's so much now. There's so much. But yeah, that's interesting. You know, I wonder if the U.S. is going to start doing that pretty soon. Now, I assume this is a government-mandated thing versus something the ISPs just got together and decided on.
You know, it was pretty vague in the piece that I came to about why exactly this was happening. Mm-hmm. It does seem like it is a part of a government campaign to crack down illegal downloads, but it doesn't say that it is required by the government. It just is that the government has basically created this program that they're calling Get It Right, and the government is strongly, I suppose, suggesting to the different UK ISPs that they should do this. So the website that I mentioned is that right now the ISP TalkTalk is one of the ISPs that'll start sending out emails near the end of the month. Virgin Media, BT and Sky are also going to be doing this. So interesting stuff.
Yeah. It's British. I'll look it up later, but I was just kind of wondering to myself, is British Telecom a government type organization like the U.S. Postal Service in the U.S., or is it an independent? Anyway, I'll go look it up to satisfy my curiosity later. Okay, so that's the end of our topics. We're into week, what are we now? Week 3 of the new year, and we have not had any of our friends on, so I think we should start. We'll figure out when we have a solid time that you and I are going to get. You know, but just for folks who are wondering why I say that, sometimes John and I decide when we're going to talk, like Friday. You know, are we going to talk on Saturday or Sunday, and what time? We're recording this on a Sunday. What is today? January 22nd, or whatever it is, whatever I said at the top. So, you know, when we bring our friends on board, you know, we'd like to give them a little bit more notice. We're sort of used to this more short notice between just the two of us, but we'd like to give our friends a week or so they can plan their schedule accordingly.
And if you are one of our, boy, my parakeets are,
they want to be,
they
on.
Would like to get, they want to guest as well. Yeah. If you are one of our tens of listeners and that's right. You would like to join in the party at some point, let us know. And if you know us in real life and you would like to be on the podcast, please let us know. We're always happy to hear what you say. If we don't agree with it, we will at least let you say it, and then we will tell you why it's wrong.
That's right.
But, you know, we'll at least give you a shot to say something before we cut you off unceremoniously. And because this is a very mean-spirited podcast, that's if right. You haven't noticed. We are very rough and aggressive people.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's a new day, you know. All right, folks, this has been Movies Podcast number 191, and John and I will talk to you next time. See you later, or talk to you later.